What's good, Waving World? It's your boy, Five Star in Vegas, broadcasting live as always from beautiful Summerlin, Nevada. This is the Waving World. I'm in here with my co-host, who's been with me since day one, the OG of the show, the only Sacramento Kings fan that I know. What's good, Spreaders? How are you?
Oh, man, I'm excited today. It's the beginning of a new week, and we got a lot going on, man. NBA is kind of fading into the background. College basketball taking center stage, and I can't wait to hear your breakdown on all these exciting games we have this week.
Yeah, we got a lot of action. We did really well on the games that we gave out for Saturday. We'll get to those in a second. First of all, great fight. We hadn't had a good fight in a long time in boxing. Really entertaining match between Javonte Tank Davis and Lamont Roach. Some people are saying that they're friends outside the ring and that Javonte kind of dragged the fight and didn't give him his full arsenal because he wants to give his boy a chance to come up and that they have a big rematch fight later on down the line. I'm hoping like in Labor Day weekend this year. But what did you think about the fight?
I mean, the story of the fight, right? It's a controversial knee that didn't get ruled a knockdown. And I personally do think that it should have been ruled a knockdown and even potentially a DQ as he got towed off during that time. And I know that the guy, I think he's Stephen Mills, one of them, he's really popular because he makes funny faces during the fight, and you know, you can catch him here and there. But this was a terrible job, and I actually thought that Roach won overall here. It was obviously close, but if you especially add in that potential knockdown, Roach probably should have won. So I do think it's set up for a good rematch, though. Started off slow. The last six rounds had plenty of action. To me, it just screams run it back, right? Let's get all this controversy out of the way. And I think that Davis can really improve and put forth a more satisfying victory next time. And if I were him in his camp, that's what I'd be doing and kind of dispelling a lot of these rumors. Kind of like Floyd did with, was it Castillo back in the day?
Yeah.
Where he won the controversial decision, but in the second fight, there was no doubt that he won.
Yeah, I'm expecting Tank to bounce back as well. He took this fight really lightly. I saw him partaking. Yeah. He was doing a little smoking and stuff, I saw it. Then he was hanging around with Jim Jones and stuff. So, obviously, he didn't put his best foot forward. Still really good entertaining fight. It's funny because I've been turning my wife onto all of these old fights because she wasn't a big sports fan until she met me. And now we've been together so long, she really enjoys, you know, the sporting events and competition and things like that. I'm sure it was already in her, but I'm so involved in it that now it's like one of her things as well. And while we're running, usually we'll get on the treadmills and start running and everything. And while we're running, one of the main things that we do is watch fights, like old fights. And this morning I was showing her Sugar Ray Leonard and Marvelous Marvin Hagler from Caesar's Palace back in the day. And she really enjoyed that one. I think tomorrow I'm going to show her the Hearns and Sugar Ray fight. And she's like, I want to see some Tyson fights. I'm like, they're not long enough. We won't even get through our first 10 minutes of running before it'll be over with. You know, he didn't have a lot of lengthy matches outside of Vander Holyfield, so maybe I'll show that one later. But good to see that boxing is back. I grew up a huge boxing fan, watching the old school HBO boxing with Lampley and all of those guys back in the game. My grandfather never missed a fight. And you remember back then, they showed the biggest fight on HBO. And that's the only reason I was able to calm my grandfather into getting cable was because he could watch his fights and also watch the Cubs on WGN. So rest in peace to my grandfather, always with me and left me with a wealth of knowledge that I use today still. Travis Hunter made a big statement. You know, the combine was going on. He didn't work out, just came and, you know, showed up a little bit, met with some teams and things like that, as well as Shedeur Sanders. Comments are going around about Travis saying that, you know, it's harder being a two-way player in the NFL than what Otani's doing in the MLB. What's your opinion on that, Spread?
I mean, I don't think that's even controversial.
Do you agree with Travis?
Yes. There's not, because of the strategy involved. And we talked about this, and I just did a best ball show And we talked about Travis Hunter's potential as a you know, corner or wide receiver. And I said, well, I think that they're going to primarily play him at a corner in his rookie year, with the idea that if you did it the other way around, you're basically signaling to the other team that you're going to run a man or a simple cover two when Hunter's in there if he's not playing. Now, we go the other way. Well, I can teach him his routes. Yeah. That he needs to know these 15 routes for these packages and then have him spend all his time on the defense. But what does a batter do? Right. I mean, there's not a lot of teammates involved. It doesn't matter. Right. I don't need to know whatever all the other guys on the field are doing to hit a baseball. Same with pitching. Obviously there's scouting that goes into it. But football is the ultimate team sport. And we saw that in the Super Bowl with the, you know, Patrick Mahomes being the best player on the field, still, in my opinion, and the Eagles being the better team and winning, you know, and obviously they're very talented defense, but they also won through cohesiveness and everybody understanding their job and doing their role properly. I don't know if we get that same result without Vic Fangio there, you know, with the, I don't remember the name, the DC that they jettisoned last year that wasn't very good. Yeah. So I don't really think that a statement's that controversial at all due to the fact of the cohesive nature of football, which is why reps, training camp, all these things are so important to a football team. And how many wide receivers have we seen be awesome in a system, get paid top dollar in free agency, and go and play something else that they're not capable of doing? For example, Calvin Ridley in Atlanta playing the Y position next to Julio was unstoppable. Then he goes to Jacksonville and plays the X, which is not much of an X.
Yeah.
Comes back to Tennessee. Put him back in the Y, looks pretty good again. So I didn't really have a problem with anything he said.
I don't have a problem with him. My only pushback would be it's a lot more difficult to hit a baseball. It's a lot more difficult also being a pitcher and having to memorize all of the batters that you're about to face and what they like and their tendencies. So I do believe that it's harder as far as in cardio for what Travis is going to do, but you're also playing a position that's kind of like the same thing. It's kind of mirrors of each other, because if you're a receiver or a defensive back, a lot of movements are the same except for the back pedal by the defensive back. But besides that, you're reading the ball, you know, you're cutting and things like that. A lot of cardio. So I agree about the part about the strain on your body with him having to play so many reps. And Otani gets time off, but Otani has a much higher pressure position with him being one of the top starters for that team, and also being the cleanup hitter. Even though it's a DH, he's in a position where he's playing baseball. We know baseball is one of the hardest things in the world to do, is to hit a baseball. So I think that what it boils down to is Travis will have to expend more energy. But I think that Otani is in much higher pressure positions, at least him being a guy that's, you know, pitching and being the cleanup hitter, because that's basically like he's the quarterback of the team and he's the middle linebacker on the squad as well. But interesting moving forward on that. Did you watch any of the combine? I didn't watch any of it. Did you?
I saw some of the highlights, but I don't actually like sit down and watch it.
I remember when combine used to be a much bigger thing than this, but a lot of people are taking the approach and they're talking crazy because Shador didn't work out. I don't think Cam Ward did either, but this has been going on a long time. You rarely see guys who are top five in their position at quarterback work out. They have more to lose. It's kind of like the Will Howard situation where he looked horrible.
Pretty bad, huh?
Yeah, Shador did a really admirable job of going to X and giving props to Will Howard and kind of picking him up, because that's the type of guy. People don't understand what it is. Shador is so confident in himself, much like myself, much like his father. He's just going to be himself, but he's still a good person. And sometimes him being himself offends people, because some people don't like jewelry. Some people don't like, you know, your hat backwards. They don't like how he dresses. Why? Like, just because it's from a different way that you would dress or look doesn't mean it's bad. It's just his style. But overall, the kid's amazing. He did a really good job right there of lifting up a guy who really needed that at the time, because everyone was talking crazy about Will Howard. But as I was saying, Shador Sanders didn't work out, and people were like, he didn't work out. I wonder why. They don't work out. They always do their pro day at their campus, and I'm sure he have a great showing. I was watching Colin this morning. Colin's the only person high on Shakur like me. And I found it really interesting what he said. He was showing the stats between Will Howard and Shakur Sanders. You remember we used to always say on the show, like, the things that Shakur is going through in college is preparing him to be a really good player, a really good quarterback in the NFL, because he was basically the offense by himself. He doesn't have a running game, not much protection the first year. It gets a little bit better the second year. But even with all of that, Will Howard had Cadillac offensive line, a Mercedes wide receiver room, the best receiver room in all of the country, throwing to probably the two best targets in the whole college football. And he was only sacked 12 times, spread. Shador sacked 42 times. Will Howard threw 35 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, 71% completion percentage with that great line, those great weapons, that great running game, Chip Kelly. You know, he had so much over there. Shador still threw for 37 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, 74% completion percentage behind a makeshift line, no running game, having to throw the ball every down, always playing from behind, always dealing with adversity. So I think that it's preparing him to do really well. A lot of gamemanship from these teams. I think all of them have their eyes on Cam Ward and on Shakur Sanders. I think that they like both of them. Me personally, you know, I'm bigger on Shador. I think Shador has a better career. I think the Cam pops earlier just for a simple fact that he has great physical tools. But I think that Shador is going to just be that quarterback that just is a sound pro and leads your locker room and is a great pocket passer and has a lot of longevity.
That's funny. I like Shador more rookie year. I think he's more pro ready right now.
I think Cam's
going to have some big adjustments to make, man.
I think what's going to pop with Cam Ward, man, is just going to be his ability to, when things break down, use his feet, you know. And yeah. Shador doesn't have as good a speed as he does. Since we're talking about that, where do you think that Cam Ward goes? Where do you think Shador goes?
I mean, obviously, the Tennessee Titans are this big domino here that's going to affect everything. If I were to guess right now, I'd say Cam 1 to Tennessee and Sanders 3 to New York. Okay. However, with the way that Philadelphia dominated, and I'm pretty sure I said this last week, I think that moves Abdul Carter up in people's minds because
But what about the injury? You heard he has a
I don't think that's going to matter. It doesn't need surgery.
A broken foot, right?
It's something to do with the foot, but he doesn't need surgery, and I don't think it's going to drop him that much. I mean, and it's funny you bring up injury because to me that's the only way this guy doesn't pop. I mean, he's about as big of a sure thing as you can get. So Tennessee plays the safe, you know, take Abdul Carter. Then maybe you see Cam Ward 3, Shador Sanders 6. If Tennessee, you know, trades the pick, then I think it'll go Cam Ward 1. I don't think anyone's trading up for Shador. I could be wrong, but if Tennessee trades it, I'm assuming they're going to take Cam. And I think it's going to be really hard for the Giants to pass on Sanders. So that's the way I see it going. My ideal situation, the Raiders fan, is
Aaron Rodgers. I think that the Giants are going to try to sign Aaron Rodgers or Sam Darnold. Now, what we have to see is, okay, Pete Carroll, is he a Sam Darnold guy? Did he, when he was going back to USC and checking in with his people while he was working in Seattle, were they giving him good reviews on Darnold? Because they're saying that he might go to the Raiders as well. And I think that all boils down to Chip Kelly and Pete Carroll sitting in the office with Tom Brady. I know that Tom Brady is a Shador guy.
That's why when people do mock drafts and Sanders goes past the Raiders, I go, I don't think that's happening.
It's no way that's happening. But I love to see him and Chip Kelly's offense. You know, like you saw what he did for Howard. Like, my God, I love to see Shador and Chip's offense, you know. But we'll see if it all plays out. I think that it does. You know how long I've been saying it. I think that he's a Raider.
If the Titans take Carter number one, I think Sanders is a Raider.
I think that the Raiders are going to trade up. I think that they're going to.
That's a possibility.
Yeah, I think they're going to give away a third or fourth rounder, just, you know, maybe a multiple ones, and switch spots with one of those teams that's in a position that they can move down that's above them, and then they'll be okay. The Giants' background have not showed me with the type of conservative franchise that they are, that they would want Shador as their quarterback. Now, if they've turned the page and went to 2025, he'd be perfect. I mean, he has a great receiving core over there to work with, and Malik Nabers leading it, and still some other guys who are really good, like Wandale Robinson,
yeah,
a decent running back, and Tracy coming back, Tyrone Tracy, really good, a good play caller, and Brian Daboll. Now, how does Brian Daboll and Shador get along? That's another thing as well, too, because Daboll is a difficult guy to play for. So we'll see how that goes. I personally don't think that Shador is going anywhere but the Ravens. I just feel like it's already pretty much set in stone with Brady and the power he has in the NFL. And also with these teams knowing there's certain guys that if they draft them, they're going to have problems. I just don't see.
I can't see Cleveland taking Sanders. I think Deion's like, nope. I think he's already called him.
That happen. It's no way, because even though he was drafted by a bad team, when he came out with the Falcons, it was a great city, you know, and a great brand. So I could see. That's why I said.
And also being a corner is being different than a quarterback.
You don't want to play
for don't get killed if your team sucks at a corner, right? Yeah, I mean, you could ruin your whole career there as a quarterback going to the wrong spot.
And Cleveland is being so eerily silent right now. Like, I haven't heard any peep out of what they might do over there. So we'll see if they trade Myles Garrett, what it seems like is going to happen, and then they draft Abdul Carter to replace him. And now what do they do with quarterback? Do they run it back with Jameis Winston with all the turnover problems that he's had, but he's well-liked in the locker room? And you got to realize we're dealing with some coaches at the top of this draft who are – this is their last opportunity. So a lot of them are going to be in win-now mode. Does Kevin Stefanski want to say, I'm going to trust a rookie, and we know that if he has another bad season, even though we know he's one of the best coaches, has won coach of the year maybe multiple times, I think more than once, he still would lose his job. Brian Daboll, really good coach, won coach of the year before. I feel like if he has a bad year as well, he's out of there. So maybe those guys go veteran. I think the Raiders have more time to build what they have going with Pete Carroll just coming in and, having Chip Kelly coming. I'm sure that probably they've already worked it out where if they can keep it together, Pete Carroll probably will coach 2-3 years and then give it to Chip Kelly and let him have the team. But everyone wants to be in Vegas, man. It's the place to live. It's the place to be. So we'll see what happens in a very interesting draft that's right around the corner. Let's jump in the pass, Britt.
All right. First thing we want to talk about, Stefano Tsitsipas. Finally does something, man. It's been a little while. His significant other had been making a majority of the headlines for that couple. Yeah. He's back in the spotlight, winning the 1,000 title over FAA, who's going to go down as one of the guys that tennis purists like us remember for what could have been and all the potential, but probably never going to make himself a name on the mainstream because he just can't seem to break through on the top. So good win there for Tsitsipas, but I don't know. I didn't really take much of it. I still think he's the same guy. He's going to do quarterfinals
at
the French. All right, quarterfinals at Wimbledon, maybe semifinals of the U.S. Open. I don't think he's a Grand Slam. I don't think he has potential to win a Grand Slam here. I think this is his ceiling.
His opportunity. I feel like when he allowed Carlos Alcaraz and sent him to get adjusted to playing with the big boys as the big three were kind of fading away, he missed his opportunity right there. Because Tsitsipas could have easily won the French Open. Right there, those years when Nadal was starting to fade and was still making it to the finals and stuff and was still, a really good player, but just was more of a clay player and was only really focused on trying to win the French. Those years there when Tsitsipas had beat Djokovic twice, those were his opportunities, I feel like, to make his headway when he was 21 to 23. Now he's, in mid-20s, late-20s in his career. He's just happy to win one, man. He posted, he said, they said my game was sinking, so I got myself a boat. I thought that was funny because, the trophy at the Dubai is so strange. It's a big ship. It's like a boat, but they're in the middle of the sand. So I don't understand that one, but good job by him. We're just happy we were able to cash. We gave it out on the show on the Ball and Parlay, and I'm glad everyone was able to cash Tsitsipas with us.
All right, Clemson was in Virginia. Big second half for Clemson. They cover. What did you see?
Clemson is just a solid team, man. They're going to surprise some people when the tournament comes around. As I told you before, Coach Brownwell does a really good job. They got the 200 boys over there at guard. One of them, Chase Hunter, has been a long time. He was a big-time player in Atlanta and as a high school player. And he went to Clemson, something that people don't really do. And he's been there a while. Now he's a four-year starter and just a really good player, man. Down game this game, but does just enough, along with the transfer that they got, Locke in the big center, comes through for those guys. But just all around, just good offense. I knew that Virginia would not have enough offense to stay with them long term. They played good in the first half. Great job by McNeely keeping them in the game early, but Clemson, as I thought, pulled away. See how Clemson does moving forward. 44 points in the second half against a Virginia team that plays defense lets you know that Clemson is really efficient offensively.
Iowa State bounces back after that tough loss they suffered in Arizona. They get the win and the cover at home. Your thoughts on these two teams?
As soon as I found out that my guy Keyshawn Gilbert was playing, it was a go. I texted Ski and told him, hey, well, he told me, he's like, he's playing. I said, well, we laying it then. So we laid the 5.5. Game was never close. Iowa State gets complete revenge for the buzzer-beating loss they had against Caleb Love earlier in the year and at Arizona. Iowa State's getting healthy at the right time. Now they're preparing for the Big 12 tournament and for the March Madness.
All right. Texas Tech, losing streak is over. We cashed the money line. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I told you Texas Tech was just a better team. This is a down year for Kansas. They're just not the squad that we've seen in the past before. Hopefully after this season, if Bill Self doesn't retire, he goes back to their old formula, which is going to recruit some guys. I don't know if they're not getting the NIL packages that he needs or if their deal with Adidas or something isn't getting them the right type of talent through these tournaments that they do with these high school players where they kind of court them. But they've fallen off a lot. Texas Tech is a good team, man. Like I said, they only have issues with Houston, and a lot of teams are going to have trouble with my Houston Cougars. Just another big win by them. They get it done. They're able to win money line after a huge start early, 48 points in the first half. I told you guys to go over also on JT Toppin. He does it again. He goes 9 out of 15. Gets 21 points for us, 2 out of 5 from the three-point line. Just a solid player. I've been riding his over, man. As long as it stays at 14.5, 15.5, I think it's an easy cash.
All right. Next one I want to talk about, Alabama. Traveled to Tennessee.
Yeah.
Tennessee got the win. Miracle ending, but I missed it. For me and the people that missed it, what happened in that one?
This one was so good. Over at Hakeem's place, we're watching the game together. We both got Tennessee money line. I'm so glad that I took the money line and didn't lay that 3 in the hook. I paid the minus 170, but it was worth it. I just had a feeling that this game was going to come down to the very end. Then I went and got them live also at plus 180. And when they were down 6 or so, I tried to cash out. And when I tried to cash out, they allowed me to cash out for the amount I invested. And I showed it to Ski, and I was like, man, Tennessee about to win. I'm like, the books already know it. Whatever their AI is doing is telling them already that things are showing that Tennessee is going to pull it out. And they did. Crazy flurry at the end of the game. Alabama had pretty much won. Dick Vitale and those guys already were giving the victory to Alabama and saying just a great job by their coaching staff and by Mark Sears and stuff like that, who had 24 points, continues to be just like Jalen Brunson, but in college. But, man, Tennessee just had a miracle ending. They're at the line down, I think, 3. The guy makes his first free throw, misses the second. Great job by Jamal Mayshak, who's a winning player, not their best player, like a glue guy. He sneaks in 6'4 guard and steals the rebound and gets fouled. Hits both his free throws, so now we got a tie ball game with maybe less than 10 seconds left. Alabama messes off the ball and ends up where Tennessee gets the ball back with 2 seconds. Mayshak gets the ball about the 50, about half court, and just drills a 50-foot three-pointer. He shot it, too. He didn't throw it, and it went right through. So just a dream ending for that kid as a senior who's been there for 4 years. Played in a lot of games for them, just a winning player, as I said, not a star player, but just a great contributor. Everything goes perfect for him on a Saturday. I'm sure he'll never forget on March 1st when he wins the game basically by himself by scoring the last 5 points for Tennessee as they have a miracle win at the end because they were down 5 points, I want to say, with 30 seconds left. So great job by Tennessee. We're able to cash money line.
All right. And finally, Auburn traveled to Kentucky. Auburn's blew them out, man. Kansas and Kentucky, right? Two blue bloods that we're used to.
Yeah.
Not as good this year as they have been in the past.
Well, this was a stat that I did not know about until the game started. And when it started, I said, I'm dead. It doesn't matter how much public money is on Auburn. Auburn had lost like 22 straight games at Kentucky. They hadn't beat them since the 70s. And with this team and how much better they are than Kentucky, that was enough motivation for me to say, oh, man, we're on the wrong side early. 94 points put up by Auburn. They're just a machine. When they shooting it from the three-point line, you don't have a chance, man. The kid, Miles Kelly for them, he goes, he makes 5 3-pointers. He transferred from Georgia Tech, man, and I didn't know he could play like this, man, but he's a really good player. Excuse me, 9 3-pointers. He was 9 out of 14 from the three-point line. Anytime a player makes 9 3-pointers, it's going to be really hard to beat them. A lot of help also from Chad Baker Mazzara. He's always, in my opinion, been their best player. Just a solid, you know, player all around, left-handed, lanky, plays the passing lanes, always gets steals. Played a lot of basketball before he was at Duquesne and at San Diego State before coming to Auburn these last 2 years to finish up his career. Just a veteran team, man. Auburn got some older dudes. Johnny Broome's old. They're all like over 24 in their starting lineup. So these guys have, like I said, seen a lot of basketball. Kentucky, we get a bad break on that one as before the game even starts, Jackson Robinson ends up doing something to his wrist and now he's out for the season with a surgery. You remember when I was breaking down this game, I was very excited that he and Butler were coming back. Lamont Butler were coming back for their backcourt. Kentucky has a really good offensive team. They're going to be a team that bet a lot of overs on. Watch Kobe Brea. He went for 21 points. I think he's the perfect two-way player. He's at Kentucky. He's going to be a really good two-way player. As usual, Kentucky has some studs that you don't notice right now, but believe me, you're going to remember their name. Amari Williams is another one to watch in the draft two spread for Kentucky. 7 foot, and this kid has handles. He has a nice stroke, left-handed, great passer from the top. You can bring him to the top of the free throw line, and he can orchestrate the whole offense from there, man. Really good player, and we're going to see him get better at the next level. So what I took from this game, Auburn has a lot of veterans. Kentucky is young. Transfers who came in to help Mark Pope that both got injured and kind of set them back. But I always bet over on both of these teams. They're high octane.
All right. In the NBA, when we did the show, we did not think that Luka and LeBron were going to play. They both played. They beat the Clippers twice this weekend. I'll never forgive Nico Harrison for giving Luka Doncic to LA. And they are solidified as a true contender in the Western Conference. And it just breaks my heart because it's going to just be year after year of this. What did you see in that game? And do you think the Lakers are a real contender here in the West? Because as much as it pains me, I feel like I'm stabbing myself if I say this. They got a great chance to make the NBA Finals, man.
Yeah, as long as LeBron is playing like he played, motivated, but just a lot of minutes, man. He played the most minutes on the team, and I know that LeBron is superhuman, and God blessed him with a great body, and I know he puts $2 million into his body every year, but still over 40 and leading the team in minutes is a lot to me. Like, he's, you know, 37 minutes a game.
One thing I'd say, though, is his minutes are easier now that Luka's there because he's not so ball dominant on offense. He gets to rest a little more on offense, and I think that we see that in the increased defensive effort because that was one of my big complaints about him. And we're going, oh, he's so great. Look what he's doing at 40. I go, well, look what he's doing on defense. Now he's playing good defense. This is terrible.
The problem was is he tried to make Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis caused LeBron to play lazy. Like, I got AD. He'll take care of. He's younger. And I think AD kind of got tired of it. You know, like, dude, like, you got me giving all this effort. Kind of same thing that happened with Chris Paul and James Harden. Like, the game within the game, whereas we got a guy who's carrying the team, and he brought another guy over there to help him carry the team, but the guy isn't carrying his weight. So I think that LeBron has been plotting for a while on getting Luka or somebody who matches his game better. Like, if you think about it, Luka, much like Kyrie and Dwayne Wade, match his game, because what LeBron wants to do is be able to get off the ball some possessions and allow someone else just to go. And he just sits in the side and gets a little break and gets some rest and trust them to make the plays, you know. So he's always been a stat filler. He's always been a guy that does a lot of things on the court. So if he's motivated as he is now, he has a very good shot at getting back to the finals. I think that their path this year in the West is something that's doable. With all the young kids at the top, they definitely can beat Houston. They definitely can beat OKC in a series. I think they better worry about the Nuggets as they're starting to shape a little bit in the form. I think that the Nuggets are getting more confident. Westbrook is starting to take on that role that they were missing last year when they let go of Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Now that he's bringing kind of energy that KCP brought, but the difference is this, man, KCP can shoot the three. Westbrook is shooting it better this year, but he's still a bad shooter from three, man, and that kind of hurts the offense. Mike Malone, with his smart and still draws up ways to make him very effective. But I think that the Nuggets, the Lakers, and the Warriors, still the OGs, the vets, are the ones to watch, because if the Lakers match up against Golden State, like, let's be for real, Jimmy Butler can kind of neutralize Luka, because he's going to bring his force not only defensively but also by, you know, hitting some clutch shots. And we know Steph always beats LeBron. He's had a really good record against LeBron throughout his career. So watch for Golden State as well. But as you said, the Lakers, by picking up Luka, everything changed. And you remember way back when they made this trade early in the month, I told you, I said, now watch, all of a sudden Luka's going to be healthy. Well, he's with L.A. playing.
You're right. He said he's going to play this weekend, and he did. I noticed you left out the two young guns, Houston, OKC. You don't give either of them a shot. I mean, I understand the concerns around Houston, but OKC, best net rating in the league. They're like plus 12.5. What are your thoughts there?
If you do it, we haven't seen you do it. That's all. Yeah. You know, I got to go the way we've been.
I just wonder if it's like 2015 Warriors, right? Where just everything comes together at the right time for this young team playing a different style of basketball.
What I worry about them is, who is their second guy? If SGA isn't cooking at night, he can only, you know,
it's got to be Jalen Williams. Jalen Williams has to be.
I don't trust him as the second guy.
Yeah, and I can understand your concern there.
Yeah.
All right, especially because the depth doesn't help.
Yeah. No, none of that matters, because it becomes situational in the playoffs, and that's why I worry about my Rockets, and that's why I'm going to tell the Cavs come home, complain about us not signing Harden, and that kind of spills into the next game, the Kings at the Rockets with Fred VanVleet returning.
Yeah, you're not big on VanVleet. I think that he's one of the guys that they're going to need if they are going to make a playoff run, but he wasn't good against the Kings. And the Kings, I'll tell you what, I'm glad I didn't get involved in that game. I would have been all over Houston there. I thought that was a great matchup for Houston. Sabonis has a huge game. He hurts himself. Now he's out for at least a week, which hurts because the Kings are right in that play-in, you know, area, right? I mean, a big game against Dallas tonight. We'll talk about it in a bit. Good win for Sacramento, but I was more disappointed in Houston that they didn't take advantage of what I thought was a fairly good matchup. What did you see in that one?
Sacramento was a good matchup for Houston, because Houston's strengths are the same strengths Sacramento have, except for they're a little bit older. You know, that's tall, lengthy wings, but these guys can score. DeRozan, Murray, Zach LaVine, Malik Monk. I told you, when Malik Monk came over there, he was a steal. Like, Malik Monk is a top five draft pick who just didn't have the right start with Charlotte, but he's a really good player. And I know now that you're watching more with him being a King, you see that. Like, he can do so much on the court. He can play point. He can play two. He can play the three. He's not afraid to defend. He gets in the passing lane, and he's not afraid to take big shots at the end of the shot clock in crucial moments. So I really wanted him to be a Rocket, and he ended up where he went back to Sacramento. Houston is VanVleet, man. 1-8. Like, you're just in the way, man. He makes the lineup horrible, because much like Jamal Murray, they hunt him. The difference is Jamal Murray can score, so he's going to make you pay, because even though you're hunting him as the weakness on Denver's defense, you're going to still have to deal with him on offense because he's going to burn you. He's going to make you pay as well. Well, okay, you got me, but I'm about to come get you. Van Fleet can't do that. That's the difference. That's why it's no way that Emi Udoka should have allowed Van Fleet to be the point guard over James Harden. If James Harden's on this team is a real contender to win it all this year with the way they play defense and the way that he would be able to help them get easy baskets situationally or could take the game over at the end when everything falls apart. You know, he could get to the free throw line or he could go in his bag and do a step back. Now we're going to have a really hard year in the playoffs. It's going to look ugly. I wouldn't be surprised if we go down in the first round. One, we don't have the experience. Two, we just don't have a smooth offense. Udoka's never been an offensive-minded guy. He doesn't call a lot of really good plays, you know, out timeout. So before Boston, he had some help with that. He had some other guys on that staff and also a GM up top who was really smart and Brad Stevens, who was a coach. Not so much now with the Rockets because Raphael Stone wasn't a basketball coach. He's just a GM. He knows how to find talent, which he's done a good job at. But I just hope that our fans don't get too frustrated. I hope that our front office doesn't panic after we don't look good in the playoffs because I'm expecting that. I'm expecting us to have some real issues and close games. I wouldn't be surprised if we could play like the Celtics, get ahead on teams early, put our defense down, run, get 20, 30-point leads, hold on at the end, and win some games in the playoffs. But if it comes down to close games, we don't have anyone to go to. They'd have to throw it to Sagoon. And the problem with Sagoon is, as I said before, he doesn't have to live by the goal, so it's easy to block a shot. And the most important thing is he's not shooting high enough from the free throw line for me to trust him as the guy. So now it becomes a kick out, and you got to hope that you can hit a three. If we're hot, we're going to be able to stay in games. If we're not, that's a problem. So lesson learned on this one, I think, for Houston is please, guys, whatever you do, just stay young. You don't need – Van Fleet can go at the end of the bench and be a coach. They do not need him playing right now, man. He does not – they're a much better lineup when they go with the young guys. They're much longer, they're much more athletic, and they give teams a lot of problems on switches. When you bring in Van Fleet, they're hunting him, and he's not making baskets. It'll be different if he was a threat. This guy's a 5'10 shooting guard. He's never been a playmaker at point guard. If you remember his best seasons at Toronto, he was backing up Kyle Lowry. When he became the starting point guard for Toronto, they weren't that successful. They weren't that good. So he's gotten a long way from being a pro, being a really good locker room guy, and also having that great series that he had when he had his son with Toronto. But besides that, I'm just not betting on 5'10 in the NBA. I've always been a guy that believes that length and height matter in the NBA.
All right, let's move on. The Warriors got upset by the Sixers, but whoop-de-doo, it's just NBA regular season nonsense. And
I didn't even watch it, did you?
No, I don't take a lot from that. Wow, they had a bad game on the road.
Yeah.
Let's keep it moving to a bigger game. And I'll tell you what, I was surprised by the result on this one because I like the way that Denver matches up with Boston. And this game wasn't as close as the final score. Celtics won in the first quarter. They were up at halftime. Denver made a push in the second half to make it look respectable. But really, I mean, Boston seemed clearly ahead of Denver. And as someone who thinks that Denver is probably the best team out of the West, I mean, not counting this newly formed Lakers team, to upset Boston if they were to return to the NBA Finals, I was really surprised, not that Boston won, but that the ease that they won, because I know the final score is 110-103, but the game wasn't that close.
And I feel like that it was close in the second half, and that was more how it would be in reality in the playoffs. The Celtics, and they do this in the playoffs. I've always said it. I got a primetime game, a standalone game, a big game. I always bet the Celtics first quarter. And I live with the results. I bet it big this time. Won really big on the Celtics on this one first quarter. And I took them first half. First half, they won. But second quarter, they only won by 1 point. But they got that big lead in the first quarter. From there, they ended up losing the third quarter by 7 points, winning the fourth quarter by 1 point. They're another team that situationally, I don't know. Now, we've seen before, maybe Jaylen Brown's just chilling, but we saw last year in the playoffs, when they just needed a basket, they could trust him to ISO and do something with the ball. Jason Tatum, not as much. I don't know why. Jason Tatum is a guy who confuses everyone, I think, because you can see the glimpses of his game where you see a little cold.
Right, the first half was what, like 29, 10, and 9?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, like, he was on pace to have the best fantasy game of the season.
Yeah, and then what happened? Yeah. Second, he's not consistent. He's never been. His shot is not consistent.
Jalen Brown's not 100% either. I wanted to point that out.
That's the reason why. Yeah, Jalen is.
He's not lifting, and he said it's harder for him to find a shot right now because he's not jumping as high as he's used to.
They better get him healthy, because if they don't have him, they're going to be in trouble. Because I saw at the end of that game when it got close, just the Nuggets were missing. Jokic didn't have a good game. He had too many turnovers in the fourth quarter. I thought that the Nuggets were going to push and win the game in the fourth quarter the way that they turned it on in the third. But what I noticed, even though the Celtics won, man, they better hope that Jaylen Brown gets healthy. Tatum is a horrible catch-and-shoot shooter. We know that. He has to pound the ball and do his little moves to score, which makes it where not everyone's standing around watching. Their best player in the clutch right now is Derek White. But what can Derek White do? He's going to ISO you and pull up a three. He's just trying to get to his spot and shoot a three on you. And it's very effective because he's one of the best three-point shooters in the league. But I don't think you can win a championship with that being your formula to close games. And until Jaylen Brown gets healthy, I'd say the Celtics better watch on repeat, man.
Yeah, and that'll be interesting to see. Of course, Cleveland did get that big victory over them.
I like Cleveland. I like Cleveland, bro. With Daniel Hunter, too, because Daniel Hunter, he's always been a really good player. I remember in Virginia, he was the best player in the country as a freshman, and they won the national championship. So he's another one that's been under the radar in Atlanta. You know, people who know basketball.
He's what like you need, too, because he plays both sides of the floor and he plays that wing position. And Donovan Mitchell's always done well against Boston, even going back to his Utah days.
Yeah, because he got heart. He has heart. So he wants to put his best foot forward against them. And another guy who's been a great pickup for Cleveland, man, is my guy from DePaul.
Ty Jerome.
What's his name?
Ty Jerome.
No, Ty Jerome has been hooping. He's from Virginia, too. Okay. So him and Hunter are back together. Ty Jerome was the point guard on that Virginia team that won the championship. Daniel Hunter actually played four for them. He didn't play on the wing. He was a power forward.
Yeah.
But the kid I'm talking about, you know I'm talking about, from Miami. German kid.
Oh, Max Strus.
Max Strus.
Yeah.
Max Strus is a baller. Bro, Max Strus, if you watch Cleveland play every night.
Yeah. And I'll admit, I was wrong on that. I totally thought he was a product of that Heat system.
No.
And he's not. He's a great player.
In college, man, at DuPaul, he had so much to his game. But, you know, of course, these guys have to give up of their game in order to, you know, fit in the NBA. So he had to learn to hit threes and just be a catch-and-shoot guy. But, bro, at DuPaul, he was breaking dudes down off the dribble. And it seems like Cleveland, now that they have their new coach over there, he's allowing him to do more of that. I saw some pick and roll from him with him being a playmaker with Mitchell out yesterday. And he looked really good, man. So Cleveland is a formidable team, man. The Celtics better not sleep on them. They can really beat them in the series.
I'm going to go power hour.
Okay.
As we move to the present. Right. So I'm just going to go to your quick breakdowns. You're not even going to get any input from me. First one, Kansas at Houston. I guess the first question for me is, do I just bet Houston first half right now? How are you approaching this one?
We already bet Houston first half -5.5. Kansas is not the squad it's been. We've already said that Houston is getting right now. They have Milos Uzan. He's a really good player from Vegas, man, and he's starting to get the confidence to be the lead guard there. We know that they're going to bring their hard hat on defense. One thing to watch, though, Houston has won the Big 12, so I don't know how motivated the guys will be tonight, but with Kansas coming in the gym in the way that we know that Coach Sampson coaches, I doubt that they don't try hard. But just in case, as usual, we're going to use our same formula. Let's go Houston first half -5.5.
All right, let's keep it moving. Another game for tonight, UCLA traveling to take on Northwestern. UCLA, short road favorite. How are you approaching this one?
UCLA is a decent team. They have a really good coach. We already know that he's going to always get the best out of guys, make them play defense. They're low-key one of the better teams in the Pac-12, in the Big Ten this year. That sounds crazy saying UCLA and Big Ten still. They're one of the better teams, 20-9 this year, 16-12 against the spread. But I like Northwestern at home at this one. It's going to be senior night for them. They're 12-4 at home. I think this is going to be a really big deal to them. I think Coach Collins has his boys ready to play and all those seniors and scrappy guys ready to play. So give me Northwestern plus +3 on this one. Long trip to Chicago for UCLA on a weekday.
All right, let's move to tomorrow night. Auburn traveling to take on Texas A&M. Auburn, pretty significant favorite on the road. We talked about them earlier, though. This is a quality college basketball team.
Yeah, and I'm seeing some places right now that it's a minus -5.5 out there. Before the previous game in the past, A&M had done really well against Auburn, which means to me that their head coach sees something in that system that Bruce Pearl is running and that he has, you know, figured out something that he can do against them. Earlier, Auburn beat them by 11 points at home, covered the -6.5. A&M has been struggling. They've lost 4 straight. With that said, I think that Buzz Williams gets the best out of his team. I think that it's late in the season. I think Auburn coming off that big, great shooting performance against Kentucky has an off night. So give me A&M plus +7. That's just a lot of points on the road against a team who needs a win really bad, has been struggling. 2 straight losses at home to Vanderbilt and to Tennessee. Just got blew out at Florida. A&M is a much better team than they're playing right now. They're 20-9, so they're right on the bubble. 12-3 at home. I think that they can cover this game. I don't think that Auburn plays this game as well as they did last game. So give me A&M plus +7.
BYU taking on Iowa State. Iowa State at home once again. How do you like this game?
This game right here should have a lot of points involved. BYU tends to make teams play their style of ball no matter what. Like, Iowa State is a team that likes to be efficient on offense. They do put up points, but they can shut you down defensively. But as I said, for some reason, the Cougars just know how to make you get up-tempo and you start getting quick shots up just like them. So on this one, I'd probably be leaning toward the total. If I had to play a side on this one, it would most likely be Iowa State just because, as I said, they're getting healthy. They're definitely the better team. BYU is 25th ranked, 21-8. Iowa State 22-7, but they're 15-1 at home. Last year, they played a real tight one, went down to 3 points, but it did go under the number last time at under 145. So I don't see a total up on this one yet, but if I had to play a side on this one, I'd probably go with Iowa State first half. -3.5. You know I am about first halves. I like to play those. Or I'd go first half over on BYU and Iowa State. No official play, though, yet.
I've got a total at 150.5 off.
Yeah, that's too high. Because just the way Iowa State plays defense, that might be a little too high for me. But you know me, this time it's rare that I bet unders. It's mostly overs. Now, I've been some unders on the
end. There's been a lot of overs in college basketball over the last week, too.
Yeah, the way those refs are so heavy, man, with their whistles and stuff, you end up being in the bonus so pretty quick. And you get in the bonus, it's out your hands, you know. So, yeah, I'll play on this one. I lean Iowa State and BYU over first half. That'll probably be my play on.
Indiana Hoosiers will be out on the West Coast taking on the Oregon Ducks. The Ducks are laying 6. Is that too many points?
It might be too many points because lately Indiana has been playing good. They're hitting their stride at the right time. 3 straight wins. I'm sure they're staying out on the West Coast. They went to Seattle on Saturday and they beat Washington, dominating them 78-62. They have some really good big men. Oregon is a team that can really put the ball in the hoop. Now they've won, 5 straight after losing 5 straight. So they're starting to hit their stride. They blow out SC. What I like about Oregon, man, is their offense. Second half, they always seem to turn up on offense. A lot of good guards over there, including the transfer TJ Bama, who came over from Washington State. They got Bartholomew, who's really good guard. We can really stroke it from the 3-point line. Also, a great stretch guy that I think that might get some run in the NBA. Nate Biddle, Oregon, in a stretch 7-footer. He was 6'10", 6'11", 7-foot. They list him 7-foot. He's right around there, but he can really stroke it from 3-point line. Close game in this one, but with Indiana coming off the victory that they just had, and Washington and having to stay away from home so long. I do like Oregon in this one. So I'll probably play Oregon for the game on this one. What is it, -6? Yeah, with free throws and stuff. Give me Oregon -6 on this one.
All right, five-star liking the Ducks to cover. Arkansas traveling to Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt laying 6.5 here, huh? I didn't know they were that good. What's going on here? Are they that good? Is Arkansas that bad? What's going on?
Everybody is always messing with me with my little chat, my little group chat of guys that I talk sports with out here. They always like, your boy's Vanderbilt, because I've been talking about Vanderbilt more than most people, and it's because I'm a guy who loves guard play. When it gets to March, the thing that's most important in college basketball is what kind of guards you have, and man, Vanderbilt has 3 really good guards. But the lead guy who I always talk about is A.J. Hoggard, man. Strong kid, great decision maker, came up under Izzo in Michigan State and ends up going to graduate school at what they call the Harvard of the South at Vanderbilt. You got to have some good grades to even get in there. So he's a pretty smart kid, but he's over there teamed up with another guy who I think really highly of. Compare this kid to Darius Garland. And like I said, it's so weird because Darius Garland went to Vanderbilt, and I still haven't figured out or found out if they even know each other, but him and Jason Edwards had the same exact game, and I liked them a whole lot. With that said, Arkansas had been playing better, but end of the day, they're just not a good team yet. They haven't been able to go buy the team that we know that Calipari soon will have over there. He's working with was the leftovers were there, and he had one transfer in Janelle Davis, but Janelle Davis is not playing near about as good as he was at Florida Atlantic. He might have played himself out of getting drafted. He probably should have came out last year when everyone kind of knew his name. On this one, though, I got to go with Vandy at home, man. Vandy just is a really good team right now. They're scoring a lot of points, and, you know, they got a lot of confidence, man. They beat some really good teams, and the teams that they didn't beat, they were able to hang and run with them. Also, they're 14-2 at home. That's a really good, you know, record to have. Just a great win against Missouri where they came back at the end and were able to do that. They are an over team. What do you see for the total on this one?
149.5.
Yeah, 149. Yeah, I lean the over on this one as well because Arkansas does not play a lot of defense, especially defending the threes. But I will be on Vanderbilt on this one. Let's go with Vandy minus the 6.5.
All right, five-star on Vanderbilt. Let's move to the National Basketball Association. Houston taking on Oklahoma City tonight. You know, of course, we talked about that loss already. That was their most recent game. So Houston will be looking to bounce back. They have a slight rest advantage because we had a 142-133 victory last night. For the Thunder, what stands out to me there is the amount of points scored in that game, 142. That's a lot of getting up and down the floor. Rockets, you know, they were up to size of second place. Haven't been as good as late. They're 5-5 in their last 10. Oklahoma City's 8-2 in their last 10. Thunder, point differential on this year, plus 12.7. Rockets pretty good at plus 3.8, but obviously that's significant there. Of course, it is reflected in our spread of 10 points here. Thunder have been particularly vulnerable against Western Conference foes. However, Thunder have the best record in the league at 47-11. However, 10 of those losses are to Western Conference teams. Thunder 25-4 straight up at home this season and 21-9 against the spread as a home favorite. However, Rockets have been good traveling, especially as a road dog. Rockets are 12-7 this season as an underdog, and they're 9-6 as a road underdog. Five-star, I like your team here to cover. I don't think I'm going to sprinkle the money line, and I probably should have last time, right, when I gave out the Timberwolves catching a bunch of points against the Thunder. But once again, I'm going to play it safe and just take the 10 points. And I pretty much outlined my reasons earlier. I do think this is a fatigue spot for Oklahoma City, and I really like Houston trying to bounce back off that loss. And, oh, five-star, if you didn't notice, your guy Fred VanVleet not going to play tonight. Probably addition by subtraction there for Houston. Give me the plus 10.
Great call. I'll be with you on Houston plus 10, but my biggest bet will be Houston first half plus 6. As you said, motivation, better lineup without Fred VanVleet. So the Rockets are going to try to turn them over, get up and down the court. They're going to be really excited playing OKC. You know, when they play Oklahoma City, they know that those are the young guns. They're the young guns, but they're at the top of their game right now. They're the top of the West, and we're trying to get there. So Houston is going to give a good effort. Also, as you said, Oklahoma City just played last night, first game home off of a three-game road trip. I don't really like betting home teams when they've been on a road trip because it's just natural. You're going to come home. You're going to see your wife, see your kids, get a little lax, you know. You got stuff to catch up with at home that you need to get done. So I think OKC comes out sleepwalking and think that they can win the game late. So give me Houston first half for sure. I'd probably take Houston first half money line as well. I'm in at point guard tonight. He's going to be really hyped. He's going to be trying to shut down SGA. SGA will not be able to pick his poison because you know how the Rockets are. They're going to have it where he's switching into Dylan Brooks to Jabari. Like, he's going to have length on him and athleticism everywhere that he goes. And I think that MU Doke has probably lit a fire on this team for their performance last game against Sacramento. So look for Houston to play well tonight. We're both on the Rockets.
Speaking of Sacramento, they travel to Dallas tonight. This is an important game. Let me see. Sacramento is 31-28, I believe. No. Mavericks are 31-28, Sacramento 32-Kings 31-28, Mavericks 32-29. Sorry, I keep getting those mixed up, but you get the point. They're really close. This could be the tiebreaker. This could be the difference between play-in or no play-in, or it could be the difference between hosting the play-in or traveling for the play-in. Huge game for both teams, and terrible news for Sacramento missing Sabonis. Mavericks have a bunch of injuries too. However, they've been playing without Davis. They've been playing without Gafford. They've been playing out Lively for a little while. PJ Washington hurts. That's the one they've been used to. It's had some big games without him here. But I think Sabonis means so much to this team. And here's the reason why: five-star is the variety. Now my skill sets are kind of overlapping, right? LaVine, Monk, DeRozan. These are all guys that are excellent in ISO, can beat you off the dribble and get a bucket. But without Sabonis to really balance that out, dribble handoffs, really get those guys a lot of open looks. And he is the number one rebounder in the league, averaging 14.1 rebounds per game. Sabonis also the most efficient player on that offense, 59.6% from the floor. One of the most efficient players in the league. So while he may not get his due in the national media, I think it's a big loss tonight. I would play a little Valanciunas. I think he will have a big game, but I don't think it's going to be enough to overcome him. And I know that we kind of forgot how good he was because everything that's going on. Kyrie Irving's probably still the best player on the floor. Klay Thompson, Max Christie's going to be able to throw in some three-point shooting. I think Dallas can beat the Kings at their own game. I like Dallas to get the win.
All right, so Spread says he thinks that.
I hate it, though. I hope I lose the bet. I mean, just my brain.
Your boys, you be fading the hell out. You always fade the hell out of them, man.
Well, if they were in Sacramento, I'd go the other way. I just look at these starting lineups now, even with them missing people, and we know these benches play so much better at home, and I think that could be the difference between the win and not the win. I think Dallas is going to win these bench minutes.
Well, with that said, then I'll lean toward taking Max Christie to go over 11.5 points. He hasn't went over the number in the last four games. He's really been struggling. 2 points at Golden State, 10 points at the Lakers, 8 points at Charlotte, 5 points at Milwaukee. So he's went under now four straight after going over six straight. So I think that Jason Kidd probably had a talk with him, as you said. Now they have with P.J. being out as well, P.J. Washington being out as well, they're going to need scoring. So I expect Max Christie to have a good game off the bench. I also would go on the over with Dinwiddie, too, because when they're missing people, Dinwiddie tends to get more shots up. His is only 9.5. I think he can get the double digits tonight in a game that's going to be pretty high-paced. As you said, no Sabonis to slow things down, so that means the Kings are going to want to get up and down the court. So I'll go with the two props for the Mavericks tonight. I think their others, as you said, get it done. And the line is showing you that they think it's going to be close. With all the people that they have missing, you got to lean on the guys who are going to have the ball in their hand. And that's Spencer Dinwiddie. at over 9.5 and Max Christie at over 11.5.
All right, let's look into tomorrow, guys. We don't have the lines yet. We're just going to talk about the game. We just talked about the Rockets here, but my guess, five stars, they're going to be laying punts on the road, and this is going to be a huge game tonight. Win or lose, I think it's going to be close. I think it's going to be an emotional letdown. To me, it'll probably be Indiana or pass. Yeah. But of course, we'll wait and see what happens tonight. But I don't think this is a good spot for Houston at all.
Not a good spot at all. You can go move to the next one. You said pretty much exactly what I feel about that one.
Warriors taking on the Knicks. I think this is going to be a high-profile game here and a good chance for the Warriors to make a statement. We talked about them losing to the 76ers. And I think that actually makes me a little more interested in the Warriors here. If they would have been continuing to win, it might be a tough spot. But boy, Jalen Brunson and the Knicks, have they been clutch so far? Brunson continues to just take over in the last 2 minutes of the game. We'll see how much the home court matters. Right now, I would lean the Knicks, but I do not think I'm going to be involved in this game pregame. I think you make good arguments on both sides. Are you seeing maybe an edge that I'm missing?
The only thing I'm going to play on this one is the fact that Steph is going against a guy like Brunson who gets all this love, and he's in New York, and we know that Steph is a showman. Steph has looked like a completely different player, much like LeBron. Now that he has Jimmy Butler and LeBron has Doncic, we're seeing the OGs play like themselves, because now they understand we got some people that are fight with us. I can play now. I can really give a full effort. I have a chance. I'm not out here wasting my time. Steph has gone over now 8 of his last 10 games. He's went over his point total. I think that he continues it. You can catch it right now at 25.5. I would not be surprised if he puts on the show in Madison Square Garden. So give me Steph Curry to go over 25.5 on that one tomorrow.
The LA Clippers, this is going to be another tough one right now, because my guess is they're going to be laying 6 or 7.
Yeah.
They're coming off the 2 tough losses. And unlike Phoenix, they haven't given up on the season. Phoenix is in turmoil. We've talked about it on the show before. Just a brief recap. I think Bradley Beal ruined the chemistry of that team. I think most, you know, Booker and Durant and these guys know that they had to get rid of him. When he refused to trade, they're kind of stuck. And I don't know if Budenholzer is communicating correctly. Reports of problems with him and Booker. They both downplayed those, but I wouldn't be surprised if Budenholzer's fired in the offseason and then the true story of that comes out. To me, the only way I could look at this game is the Clippers, and it might be the one where they just can't line this high enough. Katie, I don't want to say he's checked out, but I listened to a Locked On Suns last night while I was cleaning up, packing, getting ready for all my big move this week, and they were just so negative about this team and the schedule they're going to play. And this is one of the matchups they specifically decried is like, you know, even if we're playing well, this is a bad matchup for us. Yeah. Now we come in with no chemistry. They're in 11th place. There's a good chance there's no postseason at all, no playing, no nothing for this team. To me, it's going to be Clippers or pass. That's the only way I'd be looking in this game.
And the crazy thing is that the Suns have dominated the series. They've won 4 straight against them. And this one, I think that we're going to get a great effort from the Clippers. I think that they have to get a win. They've now lost 5 of 6, not playing well at all. I think we get a better defensive effort from them, though. And as you said, the Suns are kind of mailing it in. So I think the Clippers break the streak. I don't know what the number's going to be on the road. I'm probably guessing it's probably be Clippers probably -2 or something like that.
I think it's going to be more than that. I think everybody's lining up to fade the Suns right now. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's even higher. Obviously, Norm Powell's a big deal with that. And when we talk about the Clippers and, you know, maybe why your guy would have fit in better in Houston, Harden's having to do too much, and we can see the fatigue. And you know, it's so funny and you said this before, so I'm almost, you know, taking the words out of your mouth. Everyone likes to bag on him, but, you know, in this area of load management, nobody talks about how he plays every game. Plays a ton of minutes. And I think he's wearing down. Powell back in that lineup is key. If Powell's in, I think it's pretty easy to lay it here with the Clippers.
Yes, sir.
All right, let's move to the ball and parlay, the people segment. Why don't I start? I'm going to go ahead and start because I'm taking your team, five star.
Okay.
The Houston Rockets. I wrote that up for Bookmakers Review. You can find the article on X. I tweeted it out, but I like the Rockets here, man. And this is just one of those spots where, you know, it's the difference between, you know, this is the spot where when we bet NBA, you go, okay, see, he's way better than Houston. Yeah, they probably are. We're betting the spot. We're not betting these two teams. If this was game one and they're both equally rested and they had game planned, yeah, I'd probably lay it with the Thunder. But it's not. This is a great spot for Houston. I love them coming off the loss here. OKC coming off a very fatiguing win. 142 points. I mean, they were getting up and down the floor. Give me the Rockets plus 10.
And you guys know where I'm going. We've had a really good run on the tennis. We're going to stay over there. I caught her at plus 205. Now she's dropped to plus 182. I'm going with Jules Niemeyer. You remember she made some noise a couple years ago when she made a little run at Wimbledon and was doing pretty good in her majors. Young girl still. She's still only 25 years old. Well, she's facing a countryman in Eva Lise. Lise is a little bit younger than her. Niemeyer's had success against her before. Lise isn't a consistent player. She tends to play a lot of three-set matches. So I'm going to go with Niemeyer to continue her success. You can't beat the value at plus 185 you can get right now. And I'd go first set for Niemeyer to win the first set at plus 140. As I said, Lise tends to start slow. Not really good at holding her serve. Whereas Niemeyer's playing decent, she is good at holding her serve and does have some combinations that she can go to on points that are really important on all the pressure points. I think that she does beat Lise, and this is the qualifiers for Indian Wells. Indian Wells is about to start up this weekend. I think I'm going to take the white.
They've already started qualifying.
The qualifiers, I'm betting them now. That's today. I'm talking about the main draw begins like near the end of the week, and I think that I'm going to take my wife and the kids out there this weekend. And,
oh, are you? You're going to have a great time, dude. That's the funnest tournament.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go because I want to get my daughter to, you know, seeing some live tennis and stuff like that. So,
great.
It's a beautiful part of the world, too. We'll do a little early spring break trip, the Tesla on the road and see if I can map out a way. I'm always scared to put my Tesla on the road. I drive my other car if we go to California because I trust gas, right? So I'm going to have to map out a way to get there with charging. I'm sure it's plenty stops and stuff, but I like chargers that are like at Walmart and stuff. Like, I hate the big ones that they sell on the side of the freeway. I feel like you're gonna get like kidnapped and like pulling there and never come back, you know, that type of stuff. So I gotta get over that, man, and go to put the Tesla on the road and go to California and check out Indian Wells. But you heard the spread will be playing Houston tonight. I'll be with him as well. I'll be playing Houston first half. That'll be my bigger bet, plus 6, and he'll be playing the game plus 10, and I also probably put one unit on that. But the first half on the Rockets, I'm going to be putting about 3 or 4 units because they're really a good team early, and they struggle late situationally being able to close, and we've seen before OKC's a really good fourth quarter team. And then, as I told you before, we'll be playing the qualifiers, and I'll be rolling with my girl Niemeyer against her countrywoman, Lise. At a great number, plus 180. I know Niemeyer's been struggling, but not that much to be plus 180 against Lease. All right, guys, another showdown. We're going to be on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. We'll be back Wednesday with more stuff for you guys, more action as we get closer to college basketball tournaments. We got the conference tournaments about to kick off really soon. I think this weekend some of the smaller schools start up. Vegas will be back buzzing this next weekend and the following weekend and all the March because, as you know, they do so many tournaments here. The Big West is here always. They used to have a Pac-12. I don't know if the Big Ten is going to start coming here some, but the Pac-12 was a yearly thing that they did. I know they do the Mountain West out here as well. So I'm looking forward to all of those tournaments and watching some good basketball and also watching tennis at the beautiful Indian Wells facility. Anything for the people before we get out of spread?
Oh, man, a lot. We broke down a lot today. Kind of good we did Monday. Otherwise, that Wednesday show would have been too long. So looking forward to talking to you guys on Wednesday.
Hey, man, I look forward to you guys hit that like button. You also go to www.thewaveroomworld.com. Subscribe. You can find all the stuff here, like the show. This is the sunshine version of the show logo. And right here, we got we call it the four-leaf clover, the green Wagering World cap. Hey, guys, we appreciate you for tuning in. As always, I dedicate this show to the greatest Houston sports fan I know, and that's my father, John H. Lindsay. For Spread the Stare, I'm Five Star in Vegas. This is The Waging World. We'll see you on Wednesday.